Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We got to talk some USC football. It's game prep week or mock game week. One more. This week of practice, next week of practice, and of course, USC plays Alabama down in Dallas for the opener. Should be amazing. There'll be lots of cool stuff going on between now and then. We want to talk about the depth chart. We want to talk about the quarterbacks, all that kind of stuff that's been going on. A lot of USC news lately. We talked to Coach Harvey Hyde on Monday. Today, we're talking with Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist. And you guys have sent in an absolute ton of questions. Again, we're going to try to get to them all. Podcast at USCFootball.com is how you get a hold of us, or you can leave a voicemail by calling 641-715-3900, extension 816-646, or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page to leave a voicemail right from your computer, mobile device. And let's bring in Dan Weber. Dan, how you doing, man? What's up?
Doing good. we're in the, not quite the final run, to the season, but we're getting there. It does seem like yesterday really seemed like a start of getting ready for games, the kind of practice where they've game planned. They look like they know exactly what they want to do and who they're doing it with, and they're doing it against the scout team for the first time. And all of that, you just get the sense that, it's almost here, and it is almost here.
It is almost here. We're really getting excited here. There's people, a lot more tweets about college football, a lot more posts on the message board. The Peristyle is really busy right now. So if you're not a member of USCFootball.com, you should jump in there and get on there, the busiest USC message board in the world. And we love it. We love all the fans on there asking questions, and Dan and Gerard and me and Shotgun and everybody on there. excuse me. I'm excited. I'm losing my voice here. A lot of talking the last couple of days. Doing a lot of radio and stuff. That means college football is here. So we're excited for that. All right. I wanted to, thank our sponsor before we jump into all the questions, Dan. Mack Weldon. So you guys have heard of him before, hopefully. I've tweeted out about him. We talked about it here on the Peristyle. Yes, we're talking about a little bit of underwear on the Peristyle, and I actually started a CrossFit class today, Dan, which kicked my butt all over the place, but I was very comfortable because I was wearing my Mack Weldon, boxer briefs. So I like those. So check it out. So just to let you guys know, so Mack Weldon, it's a higher grade, higher quality of underwear and men's apparel. You check it out on MackWeldon.com. So anything you check out there, if you buy it, 20% off if you use the code Peristyle. It's for the Peristyle Podcast. So P-E-R-I-S-T-Y-L-E. Peristyle, 20% off Mack Weldon stuff. Go to the website, check it out. The website's really easy. It's intuitive. It's not really complicated. You can kind of go and look at the stuff you like. So, I do like the boxer briefs. The socks are awesome. I wore them. I had to go to a wedding in Tennessee. So I wear the long socks, which I like a lot. The one thing too is it's really good stuff. But if you're not comfortable in it, they want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, you could keep it and they're going to send your money back. So you get 20% off and they'll give you your money back if you don't like it. So definitely try it out. I've never done the higher end underwear thing before, and now I'm never going to go back. So make sure you check it out. Our buddies, Mack Weldon, MackWeldon.com. Check it out, the Peristyle. All right, Dan, before we jump in, I know there was a topic you wanted to discuss first. It's been a topic on the message boards about how physical, or lack of physicality there's been at USC football practice. So maybe we'll start with that and then we'll jump into all the other stuff.
Yeah, I know there, and it's a carryover maybe from, the failure to engage for the Holiday Bowl and giving them a week off and, more worried about, they need to recover from the season and getting ready to be able to be physical and slug it out with Wisconsin. And, that was clearly a misstep, which we said at the time. But I think there are people who are, interpreting that's, been a carryover, and it really hasn't. Our USC's practice is long enough. They're half hour, 35 minutes longer than any practices that, we've gone through since, and not, in, you know, including Pete and everybody. So these are the longest, you know, most thorough practices. They, you know, I think this is the best conditioned team, in the best shape that we've, you know, seen a team, certainly in recent years. And I will note this, for example, you know, this team essentially had three scrimmages. If you want to look at Alabama and people look at Alabama, they've only had two. They're only going to have two scrimmages. And one of them got, you know, had all kinds of problems with the rain and all that. So I don't think this is a team that, you know, is not going to be, you know, physical. And, you know, they don't, people say, oh, they're not doing enough tackling in practice. You know, they do the thud where you do everything but take them all the way to the ground to avoid that injury. And I think the difference is if you stand around and, you know, play the defense they've played the last couple of years and thud, that's a problem. You don't get the proper tackling angles. You don't get the proper speed and all that. But if you're aggressive in your scheme and you get the team, you know, get the defense, you know, defenders running to the ball, running, you know, aggressively on every play, you basically run through people in the tackle with the kind of athletes USC happen, you know, has, the tackles, you know, make themselves, you know, if you're in the right place at the right time, at the right speed, and all of that kind of thing. So I really don't have that kind of, you know, worry or those kinds of issues. And this is, you know, we're talking, obviously, we're playing out, you know, you're playing Alabama, the most physical team in the country in recent years, and you got Stanford 2 weeks later. And I don't think it's as big an issue as some people, you know, seem to worry about. I think this team will be as prepared as this team can be, you know, for the first game. That's my thinking. I don't think it's an issue.
All right. Well, let's jump right into the questions because we have a ton, like I said. We'll start with a short one. Stephen Poway, any surprises on the depth chart? And for people who don't know, Clay Helton released the two deep depth chart over the weekend. Of course, naming Max Brown as the starting quarterback, and then the full depth chart came out on Sunday.
I guess my only surprise would have been the fact that Chuma Adoga has been playing left tackle for the last certainly more than a week, and he wasn't listed there, which seemed to be, you know, a very optimistic take on Chad Wheeler's return to left tackle. I probably would have certainly listed him as an or there, or listed him somewhere as a left tackle. That was kind of a surprise, I think to me. Others, I know people think Jacob Daniel as the third team nose tackle, is a surprise. Honestly, when you watch Stevie Tuikalavatu and, Khalil Rogers, it's not. I think people are underestimating the impact of Khalil Rogers, for example, on defense. I think they're, you know, they're, well, he never played there before. But I think in this defense that they're playing, he will be an impact player there. And it might have been, you know, a lot to expect, you know, somebody, a younger player to get ahead of Khalil, even though Khalil had not ever played there. So otherwise, I think, for example, some people saw Isaac Whitney listed as one of four, you know, wide receivers at one position and thought that means he was really relegated. And I don't think that means that at all. I think you're seeing the kinds of combinations in the two deep where, it isn't that obvious that this guy is ahead of this guy is ahead of this guy, the way they're, you know, kind of mixing and matching their combinations. So I think maybe we read a little bit too much into some of those, you know, where they exactly are on the depth chart.
Okay. Gene in Orange County, he says, I think Helton made another big mistake on picking Max Brown as the quarterbacks. You guys and everyone else have been saying both quarterbacks were playing even. No way to pick one over the other. The one thing SC has been lacking the last few years is a mobile run option type quarterback to compete with the other modern offenses we are facing. With Sam, we finally had a good mobile quarterback. Although Brown is a good quarterback, he is the old style pocket passer. This was our chance to modernize the offense, and now Sam may leave us as Brown has 2 years of eligibility left. What do you guys think?
Well, first of all, Sam isn't leaving, so I guess that changes the hypothetical of that question. And I guess if USC can be the old style offense, you know, like, oh, I don't know, Alabama, Stanford, I think USC fans will take that. That's probably not the worst thing in the world to be that kind. I think USC, Clay makes it clear, USC's always going to have a quarterback who can throw the football. I mean, I think there are teams that said, you know, we've got the ability to get an athleted quarterback. Okay, maybe he doesn't throw the ball great, but he can scamper like crazy. Well, I think you got to build that into your whole program with, you know, everything you do in terms of your recruiting and your backups and all that kind of stuff. And you can't just have one of those guys, or you can't just say, well, we're going to change our offense because we got one guy who runs it a little bit better than the guys we used to have. And then he goes down to who you got behind him. So I think USC is not giving in. They're saying, we think we can be the kind of team that USC was. We think we can be the kind of team that USC historically has been, with people who can block you and people who can be physical and people who can run the ball behind those blockers. And with a strong arm quarterback who can throw the ball down the field, especially off play action, because you have to respect the run. You can say, well, that's what Alabama does. And you say, well, maybe we'll do it with a better quarterback. That would be a good idea. Or the same, you know, with Stanford. And, so, you know, I wouldn't call this, you know, this is the new way to go and this is the old way to, you know, no, I don't think that's, I mean, have you checked the NFL out? How many touchdowns did Peyton Manning run for in his career? Or how many touchdowns is Tom Brady going to run for? You know, I mean, you could actually win without a quarterback who runs the ball. Really, you can.
Yeah, and the offense wasn't changing. Clay Helton made that clear. They weren't going to have the quarterback run 15 times a game, no matter who, end up winning the job. So just because Sam won doesn't mean they were changing the whole offense for him. It was going to be the same offense.
And you know, I mean, let's face it. There's no comparison in the championship game between Clemson's Deshaun Watson and Alabama quarterback, you know, Jay Coker. Who won, you know? I mean, okay, you say for a lot of reasons, but, you know, I don't think you have to change what you're doing in order to win football games. I don't think USC does, okay? I don't think USC has to chase the trends. A lot of those people, you know, do that because they can't get that quarterback. Here, USC's got, I mean, to be honest, USC's got two quarterbacks who'd probably start at Alabama. Or for almost anybody in the SEC. So why not take advantage of guys who can throw the ball? Big, strong, you know, classic quarterback types. And the fact that, you know, you get one who could also run it, that's a bonus. But it doesn't mean you've got to change everything because of that.
Let's see. Let's go to Martin in Ontario. He wants to know, will we see more of the offense rolling the pocket to throw down the field, which the offense used to do in the past with success?
Well, I think you'll see some of it, yeah. I don't think there's any question. And you can do that, you know, with play action. And I think you'll see a lot of different things. And one of the things I like about, you know, what I'm seeing with this group, I think, you know, and again, we didn't get to see that as much, because they didn't change the way they did things in fall camp, really in spring ball. They reacted to what the defense gave them, and that's what they ran. And they didn't make the defense, you know, you've got to do this so we can do this. So they were scrambling at times. The defense made life, you know, tough on them. And if the defense ran a lot of stuff, for example, that where they couldn't throw the ball to the tight end, they didn't. Now, we wanted to see him throw it to the tight end, but you don't want to see him doing that when the defense isn't giving you that. And you got to try to force that. I think we're going to see more of that. That's what yesterday's practice looked so good, because they're going against scout team running Alabama stuff. They're going against the ones, against the twos. And they got more of a chance to get a sense of what it's going to be like in a game. And I thought they looked really sharp, and I thought they looked diverse. And I thought they looked like they knew what they were doing. And that was encouraging because we haven't seen them in those situations yet this year. So, you know, they made them tough it out. They made the offense go against some really tough stuff. I think that they're better for that. Now we're going to get to see them going against, you know, the kind of, you know, stuff that they can game plan for. So I kind of like the way they've done this.
Matt had a question. Dan, what's the deal with John Plattenberg? He was a starter last year and now is third on the depth chart. Is that a result of talented players coming into the defensive backfield or a lack of effort? Matt.
See, that's where you probably got to read every day and keep up, and not that we don't like the fact that you're asking the question, but the fact that you're asking it in a way that's sort of a negative about a wonderful kid. I mean, he's up for a couple of national awards in terms of some of the nonprofit service groups that he's developing to, you know, help kids in the neighborhood participate in sports. And he's got one where they try to help people get the kind of clothing that they need for job interviews and all that. He's just a marvelous kid. He got a concussion 2 weeks ago. And he's still in the concussion protocol, so he hasn't been able to practice for a couple of weeks. He had the biggest single hit in fall camp, unfortunately, you know, for John. But yeah, I wouldn't, I wouldn't read negative things into the depth chart. If they're all healthy, they've got pretty many safeties. John Plattenberg's one of them. He's a good one. And all we can do is hope he gets back. But, you know, we haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. So he got a pretty good shot. And so I don't know where this leaves him, you know, for the season. And we haven't got any more, you know, information. That's Clay. All he'll say is, you know, that he's still under the concussion protocol. So I'm glad they're, you know, playing it safe with John. But John's a very much an effort guy, very talented guy. And USC will be very much better off when he's able to come back.
Another Matt had a question. Based on what you've seen so far, who's the best hitter on defense, and who's the surest tackler? Without Sua Cravens, we need someone to step up. Last year, he might have been both the best hitter and surest tackler.
Interesting.
I don't really. It's hard to really say. I mean, I would guess, but
the way they're playing out, I mean, they're not playing where, oh, it's this one guy or it's that one guy. This is really team defense. This is team pursuit. This is guys and angles. You don't see anybody that you say, okay, you know, maybe Cameron Smith, you know, if he gets a really good shot, you know, in the open field on somebody, maybe Porter Gustin, you know, the big guys that can move. You know, Marvell Tell will come up and hit you, you know, all the, DBs. Adoree's really, you know, working on his physicality. Biggie Marshall's always been a, you know, physical, you know, kid back there. Leon McQuay, the way they're playing him, you know, in the nickel and covering the slot and moving him to the football, he'll really, you know, hit you. So I wouldn't just pick any one of these guys and say, oh, he's the big hitter. That's not as big a deal now. I mean, it's almost kind of a negative in a way because, as we saw with John Plattenberg, you know, the biggest hitter of fall camp and, you know, he's out. So, and with the, you know, thought more of, the rugby style tackling that the, you know, Seattle Seahawks have really, you know, talked about that, you know, is more of a secure way of tackling, but it's also a way, you know, of saving, your defensive player that you're not, you know, putting that head right in the middle of somebody's, shoulder pad, breastbone, whatever. So I don't think you see that same kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, if a kid does light somebody up and all the defensive guys will scream and shout and, you know, they love it. But, I don't think there's the emphasis on, you know, this is what you got to do, and really light somebody up. You just got to get them to the ground as efficiently and surely is possible, and everybody will be happy if that happens.
Let's go to Brian in Birmingham. He says, what's good, Ryan? Brian in Beeham, SEC fan, and I mean SC fan in SEC country, checking in. Got a question for you and Dan. With the possibility of Chad Wheeler being out or very limited for the season opener, do you move Zach Banner over to the left side or entrust Chuma Adoga to handle the job? As always, go Trojans. P.S. Attaching a photo of I took last month while on vacation on Waikiki Beach. Tour guide with Troy Polamalu's father on the North Shore. So thanks for that picture, Brian. I know we can't see it on the podcast, but that's Brian's question, Dan.
Wow. Haven't actually gotten to meet Troy's – heard about him, but – haven't ever met him. I don't think you move Zach. Then you maybe are, you know, making changes on both sides. I like the idea. They moved, you know, for a day or two. I like the idea of keeping Zach and Vianney as kind of this big, you know, power run game, you know, behind them on the right side and go from there. And so make one change, and that's all the change you got to make. And that's Chuma. I talked to Chuma quickly yesterday. He's up to 290. That was all. He played at 275 as a freshman, and he really wasn't big enough, probably. At 290, he's getting there. He's getting to look more like the guy you want. He's always had good feet, and his angles have usually been good. So for a lot of reasons, he's more suited to be on that left side, you know, than anybody, basically. And you don't have a lot of depth now, because then you really don't have any kind of veterans behind either tackle if Chad's not back. But I think Chuma is the best solution. Keep Zach where he is. I guess if you have to go somewhere else, then you start thinking about one of the four guards. You know, maybe a Chris Brown or a Jordan Simmons. It would be the next possibility to move out there because, you know, you're really young when you're going with a second team right now as E.J. Price, a true freshman, and Clayton Johnson. So, but I like Chuma there, and I think that'll be fine.
Let's see. Tarek had a question. Do you agree with the decision to have T. Martin and Tyson Helton in the booth, especially with the new quarterback?
Yeah, I think one of the advantages USC has is you've got Clay has been the quarterback's coach. Clay recruited Max. Clay's been there. You know, Clay recruited Sam. I think having Clay there on the field is fine. And I think having Tyson and T, if that's the way it works out, we'll see. But if that's the way it works out, having those two together and able to, you know, really communicate together, I think that's a good way to, you know, to look at it. But I'm not worried about, you know, that having somebody down on the field since you've got Clay, you know, down on the field for the quarterbacks.
All right. We have Gary in Seattle. He says, I'm a little confused by a statement you've made in your Clay USC Got It Right story. You stated that if Sam was selected as the starting quarterback, then the offense would have to be adjusted to take advantage of what he does. I was always of the thinking that Sam is the perfect fit for the offense that we are currently running and not so much for someone like Max. Are we not still using the zone read option when handing off the ball? If so, it seems like you wouldn't have to or would want to change much at all. If it were Sam in there, as opposed to Max, who, like Cody Kessler the last 2 years, is not a big threat to keep the ball and run, therefore not as efficient at keeping the defense honest. If anything, you would think we would change the offense some to better fit Max and not the other way around. Can you explain your statement of needing to change the offense if Sam had been selected? Thanks, as always, Gary in Seattle.
Yeah, Gary, I think you'd have to really decide that the read option with the quarterback run is a big part of the offense. And, you know, I don't think they've wanted to devote that much to the quarterback running the ball. Because if you go with a running quarterback, he gets hurt. And like a lot of programs, the second guy isn't the running quarterback. I think the other thing that they they would probably have to change is the ability of Max to really understand all of the nuances of the passing game, and they really want to be able to, you know, hit the first guy that's open. They want the quarterback to be protected. They want him to understand all the protections. They don't want, I mean, one of the things you see with younger athletic quarterbacks is if that first option isn't there, they can kind of just decide, you know what, I ought to take off with this thing. I don't think they want that. I think they want somebody who can go from, maybe he has to go from option one to option four immediately, but I think they feel that's what they want, and that's what Max can do. So I think the idea of spreading the ball around more efficiently and quickly is what Max does and gives them the ability to stay with their vision of how the game is. I think if they go with Sam, I think they got to go a little more heavily on the quarterback run. And that's why when they say they're going to have a package or two, maybe red zone, maybe short yardage, you can bet it's going to involve the quarterback run. So that's not going to be the exact offense, and that's why you would put Sam in there because of, you know, kind of a different approach if he's the quarterback. So that's what I'm thinking. I think there would have been more change involved if they go with Sam than if they go with Max. Not that you can't do that, and not that they're not going to do that in some of these packages, but in terms of the general way that they were approaching the offense, my feeling is that Max more reflects where they are right now.
Let's see. We have a question from Matt. He said, if you had to select one player from the USC football team to come stay at your house for a week, who would it be? That's kind of interesting.
I guess it would depend on whether you want to spend the weekend listening to someone. If you did want to do that, you'd probably bring Zach Banner, because then you wouldn't have to talk at all. Zach will get the job done for you. One thing you would want to do is hide all your blue shirts, however, so that Zach didn't spot anyone or any blue shirt anywhere in your house. The food situation might be a little more challenging if Zach were the guy. And I'll be honest, another guy who is absolutely delightful to talk to, a conversationalist, who's always got time for you, is Adoree Jackson. The other day, was on the field, and Adoree had gone outside and was talking to some people, and then was about to leave, and I go come running up and say, oh, here, I'll walk in with you, I don't want to hold you. And he said, no, I got time, no problem. He just, you know, sit as long as you want. And that's really cool. I mean, the kids are like that. And yeah, I'll be, to be honest, you don't want to just pick out a couple of guys. This USC team has an awful lot of really cool kids. And, you know, I was sitting at outside Galen Center a couple of weeks ago, kind of putting the ghost notes together, getting them ready to go in, and Jordan Simmons comes by and sits down and just starts talking. You know, he's a senior now, and he's done a lot of really interesting things that you don't always get to find out, you know, in terms of his working with Nike and wanting to be a shoe designer and all this kind of stuff. And so there are an awful lot of these kids that you'd probably like to say, hey, that they'd be fun to come by for a weekend. Really like this group. This is just kind of a nice bunch of kids.
Yeah, if the food bill was, you know, taken care of, Zach Banner, I think, would probably be on the top of a lot of people's list. Just a cool dude all around. I mean, there, like Dan said, so many cool guys. He had another one.
I mean, he's one of the few kids you think could go directly from college to his own sports talk show. I mean, he's quick and smart and funny and interesting. And he's a neat kid. And he's been working, you know, intern the last couple of years for Fox Sports. So he's been around. He's been around it. And his dad, Lincoln Kennedy, is a sports talk show guy and a college football and NFL analyst. So he comes by it naturally.
And then the second part of his question was, who is the USC true freshman football player that will have a breakout season in 2016? It seems most observers would pick Jack Jones, but I'm not sure if he's going to be on the field very much.
That's a good question. I think the good news is we're not sure who that person might be. I think that's it's not like you need this guy to come through. I've been surprised in reading some of the Alabama stuff. They've got a couple of true freshmen that they really think they got to have come through. And I don't see that at USC at this point, where you feel like a lot is going to be determined by, who comes through, as a true freshman. You got guys that were here in the spring, like Josh Imodabebe and Michael Pittman. You think, these guys, that could be a good thing. But they're in a position with, so many athletes. You don't quite have that, that same sense. I just EJ Price would be close to the top of the list just because he's at that left tackle spot where Chad Wheeler is kind of iffy. But boy, it's asking an awful lot. I know Alabama's got a freshman that they're going to play a tackle, an offensive tackle, but that's really asking a lot of a freshman.
Yeah, I would say, Dan's exactly right about this, that because this team is so much deeper than we've seen in the past, you're not likely going to be reliant. Now, there might be some that step up, but you're not like, well, they need this guy. I don't see any freshmen like, yep, that they need that guy to come in and play, like a Tyler Petit last year. And there were so, guys on the defensive line and, just there was a lot of people from that really good recruiting class, or Cameron Smith, and they needed those guys to come in and play. I don't see the same sort of need this year.
No. And so whoever it is, it'll be a bonus. We'll be, thrilled to death. But, just none of that sense of, this guy's got to do it. Unless you count, if you're counting true freshmen, if you count redshirt freshmen, it changes the equation a little bit. But, real freshmen, and that's a really good sign of progress that, of where this roster is.
Let's go to Paul. He says, hello, Dan. He goes, I really feel like my impression of you, Ryan, is getting better. I think it is, Dan. Good job. Not Paul. We are looking forward to the upcoming Alabama game in less than 2 weeks. My question to you, Dan, is, within, say, the first 15 minutes of the game, what are the key things that you will be looking for from this USC team that would indicate to you that this is going to be a close game, or even USC has a shot at winning the game? Lastly, I want to express my gratitude and appreciation to you, Ryan, and your staff at uscfootball.com. I've been a listener for about 6 months now, and I really look forward to your podcasts, especially the ones with Dan and Gerard Martinez. Thanks, Paul from Santa Clarita. Well, thanks very much for that, Paul. We really appreciate you coming on and listening. Glad you found us.
Hey, Paul, here's what I would look for. And I remember talking to Pete Carroll about this, and he said, you can watch all the film and have a sense of it, but until, those first few plays, you just really don't know. And, I'll watch for the quickness. Where do the players end up? What kind of angles are they giving themselves offensively and defensively, blocking and playing off the, the blocker? Do they get where they need to be? And what kind of force are they able to exert when those, two lines on either way you're looking at it, who gives, who looks like, they're getting the better of it? What kind of force, is behind, that sense of, okay, we know what we're doing. And can USC get to the edge? Can they turn the corner? Can they create some seams inside? All of those things, I think, really, really important. And again, until you line up and actually do it, this is a USC team that's not going to be doing it the way you wanted or you saw a USC team in recent years. They didn't think they had the numbers or the body. They certainly didn't have the coaching, the attitude, whatever. This team pretty much has most of those things. This team feels like it should be able to get out, you know, get up there and slug it out with the likes of, you know, Alabama and, you know, Stanford, Notre Dame, Utah, people like that. But can they? And, you know, there are a lot of things that will indicate whether they can do that or not, but this will happen fairly quickly where you'll get a sense. And then, you know, does this team have the stamina and the staying power, having gotten itself into the kind of shape it's in, to be running at the end of the game? I think it's a little harder for teams out of the, you know, the deep south and the humidity and the heat and what have you, to maybe get themselves into that really top game condition for game one. So I think in some ways USC has an advantage there. And the other thing, and I will recommend this to everybody who cares about USC football, go on YouTube and find the highlights, like three and a half minutes of highlights from the USC Auburn game in 2003. And watch that game. And watch the way that kind of a young, in some ways, USC team went down there and took out a veteran, you know, Auburn team that some people thought could win the national championship and put, you know, a double-digit number of guys into the NFL. And USC just took them out of the game. They played with a, you know, ferocity, especially on defense, that just didn't let Auburn in the game, and Auburn couldn't get up to the speed that USC was playing with. So I think that the thing you want to watch right away is how fast is USC able to play in this game, and how does Alabama handle it? So, you know, I know that's a flip for a lot of people say, Alabama's so big and strong, how will USC handle it? But I think you can look at that, you know, two ways. And so that's how I'll be looking at it, and it'll be, you know, that's all you're going to look at, because you're just going to be thinking, how is this going to turn out? How are they, you know, are they prepared? Do they have what it takes? And we'll see. It's why you watch football games like that, because you really don't know.
We certainly don't. But speaking of that game, Dan, that's a great segue to Stephen Poway's question. He said, I've enjoyed your recollection of the 2003 Auburn-USC game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I was there. And there are two things I would add to your comments. First, right before the game started, the Auburn fans practiced a new cheer they were going to perform that year after each touchdown by the home team. The amazing thing was they didn't get the chance to do it once that game, highlighting the fact that this really was a defensive effort through and through, and the offense did enough to keep them in the game. Taking pressure off the brand new quarterback, redshirt sophomore, Matt Leiner. Secondly, just as the Trojans were about to come onto the field to start the game, I was able to see their faces up close, and what I saw amazed me. They did not have the look of a team about to get slaughtered by a top five team in the SEC on their home turf in 90 plus degree heat with 100% humidity. Instead, Pete Carroll had them all believing they could actually win this thing. And thanks to the defense, they did. P.S. Auburn fans could not have been more polite or accommodating, even though we essentially wrecked their dream season before it ever began. Beat the Tide, Steve and Poway.
Yeah, Steve, and one of my great memories is they basically had, you know, the full stadium, 85,000 people there an hour and a half before the game. And that was the year that, you know, Tommy Malone, and I told this story before, was the, you know, absolutely 49.9 whatever yards a punt, and was the best punter in college football, I don't know, since Ray Guy maybe, before he injured his leg. And he came out, and I don't know if it was purposeful or not, but he's warming up on the side of the Auburn students, and they're really good football fans. They know their football. And he was kicking the football way above the top of the stadium, and it's deep. I mean, he's kicking it, you know, 80 yards. And the more he kicked it, the more, the quieter the whole Auburn student section got. I mean, each punt that soared above the top of the stadium and down to the other end, and they got quieter and quieter. And I told this to Tommy. I said, I don't know if you realize that, but he basically kind of shut down the whole, because they're looking at him, and they're smart enough to realize, we don't see anyone who comes in here who punts the ball like that. That's like, who are these guys? because they had, you know, obviously hadn't seen a UFC team ever at Jordan-Hare. And I think they started thinking, there's something going on here. These guys are, you know, they're different. I think that's what you want USC to come out and play like, you know, next week, is to come out and have a sense of, no, we're like the real USC. We're back. And get them to looking at one another like, oh, this isn't good. But that's the model, I think, that game, that 2003 game, when people weren't sure, you know, Carson Palmer left, Troy Polamalu who had left. Was that, you know, Orange Bowl team a kind of a fluke? And here we go again with a new quarterback and all of that kind of thing. And it made it clear, no, that was just the start. And, that was fun. And to be honest, I think I'm going to recommend to Clay that he show them before they go out next week, show them those 3 minutes of, USC Auburn highlights, because I don't know if these kids have ever seen them, but, they need to see them, because, there was a way that USC team played and conducted itself that there was almost nothing Auburn could do about it. And, we'll see if that, you know, can translate to, 2016.
All right. I think we'll do one more, Dan, and we'll let you go. I know we got to get to practice a little bit later. Our buddy, Dan, class of 1962, he said, thanks for all your insight and for keeping Trojan football in perspective. I just hope that Lynn Swann and the USC administration give Clay Helton at least 3 years like they did for John McKay and Pete Carroll. I don't think you need to give Pete Carroll any time. He won the Orange Bowl the second year. But during Pete's first year, when he went 6-6, I had the opportunity to work with a very prominent high school coach who sent many players to D1 schools. I asked him what he thought of Pete Carroll. Unequivocally, he said that if the administration sticks with him, then he'll do great things. I never forgot that assessment and what happened under Pete. The second full year is always going to be the critical year. I also like that Clay Helton does not appear to be looking for an NFL job and seems to genuinely like being the coach of USC. Your thoughts? Fight on, Dan.
Yeah, and you never know what administrations know about. I still remember I came in that 2002 season, and I got a sit-down, like the first, well, I guess it was still in fall camp, with Mike Garrett. He hadn't been at practice, and I still remember we're talking about how practice was going, and he says, what do you think of Pete Carroll? You think he can do it? I said, well, I really like what they're doing. I like practice. You know, I like the way he's practicing. I like, you know, everything about, you know, the way this is happening. But I still got the sense that going into that year two, they weren't sure what they had with Pete Carroll. And, you know, so you never want to, you put it in the hands of people who maybe aren't football people and all of that, and yet you have to, and that's the right way to do it. But you want the program and the coaches to settle it so they don't have to make any decisions. You know, you want them to, you know, and obviously you could have a really good year this year and maybe finish 7-5 against that schedule. I mean, you could be right now on paper, you could be like the 16th best team in the country and lose 5 games. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Not only do they play 7 top 28 teams in the first AP poll, they play 5 of them away from home. I mean, for example, UCLA plays just 2, and they're both at home. So, you know, this is it's a great opportunity, but man, talk about a great challenge. I mean, if Alabama had this schedule, people would be saying, I don't think they'd be picking them. So how this all plays out, I don't think we know. You just want them to go out there and play like you remember USC football playing and see where that leads them.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. It's, the schedule is really tough. There's a lot of coaches that are doing things for the first time. You got a new quarterback. I think that this team could probably play pretty well. And like you said, lose 5 games. And I think it's one of those teams that you're going to need to see progress because the first four games are so hard. The middle ones aren't too bad, and they finish really strong too in the schedule. You know, Notre Dame and Oregon and UCLA. So you have to, I think this is one of those teams where you're going to have to see improvement, as the season goes on, not big lulls, not, they look good one week, crappy the next week. I think if you see this team kind of improve, then that's probably a good sign for the next couple of years down the road. But, I don't think any administration was going to get rid of Pete Carroll after he won the Orange Bowl in his second season.
Yeah. No, if Clay Helton, he didn't give him any choice at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, yeah, he was 6-6. So, you know, now there is talk because of, you know, Clay Helton had a few games last year. If they struggle this year, I mean, he could be on the hot seat quicker than other coaches, just because of the situation, you know, but I don't see them making a move after 1 year of 500 football like that, you know, like, you know, obviously they didn't do that with Pete Carroll either, but I don't see something like that happening. If Clay Helton's able to turn things around and win the Pac-12 South or something his second year, then yeah, I mean, he's not going anywhere.
No, and just keep it in your own hands and, you know, get it done with these guys. And, he's got a chance to get it done for sure. And, I think he's got the staff that, you know, can get it done. And if they don't have any really terrible breaks, he's got a fighting shot to just move on and see where he can take this program now that, you know, the sanctions are gone. And, you know, this school is a fabulous place. As Clay said the other day, he said, you get a top 20 educate. He said, somebody said, you know, is it harder to recruit against somebody like an Alabama with the success they've had? And he said, look, he said, we've got the most NFL draft picks, most first round picks, the most Hall of Famers, and you get a top 20 education in the country. He said, you know, what's not to like about that? He said, we're fine. We're going to recruit fine. You know, this is a place that, you know, we don't have to, you know, make excuses for. And now you got to get it done on the field, so you don't have anything else there to say. But and we'll see. And if they do get it done against the schedule they're playing, the whole world will know. I mean, that's the upside is you've got the greatest opportunity of anybody in college football this year. The downside is you've got the toughest schedule in college football, and an awful lot of them are on the road. So we shall see, but. It's going to be fun, I think. It's got a chance to be really fun in one of those seasons that you always remember, like you did in, you know, 2002, 2003. That, you know, people always are going to remember that. And, you know, USC's got a chance to put themselves in that place. It's very difficult, you know, to do that. But, all you can ask is to have a chance. A lot of teams going into this season probably don't think they really got much of a chance. USC does.
They do. All right. Well, thanks, Dan. It was great stuff. We have actually more questions. I think I'm going to do a solo podcast also. So if you have any more questions, I'll try to do one of these maybe tomorrow. No practice for USC. Well, they have practice, just players aren't available. So Dan will be out there. I probably won't. So maybe I'll come into the studio and do a solo podcast. If you have any questions, podcast@uscfootball.com. We do want to get a recruiting one in as well. So maybe we'll do that instead. I'm not sure, but we'll plan on doing another podcast tomorrow because we do have a lot of interest, of course, around the USC program right now. But Dan, I just want to thank you again for coming on the show and sharing all your insights. Really excited. We got practice again this afternoon. Lots of opportunities to talk to these guys and kind of see where their head's at and how they're going to play against Alabama.
Sounds good. See you this afternoon.
All right. We'll see you out there, Dan, and everyone else. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast. And I want to thank our sponsor, Mack Weldon. Make sure to check it out. They're guaranteed. If you don't like it, you can get your money back and keep the underwear. MackWeldon.com. Peristyle is the promo code. You get 20% off. So 20% off and you can get your money back if you don't like it. So good stuff there. Thanks to Mack Weldon. Thanks, Dan Weber. Thank you for everyone that wrote in. And thank you for all of our listeners on the Peristyle podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show and we will talk to you next time.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, realestate.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.